Welcome to the wide world of punting. This is season 2, episode 1. I'm Jacob Wynn. I've been on a little hiatus after a great NRL season, although you may have seen I've popped up here and there on a couple of other shows, but I'm back again solid now, guys. For the next couple of months, we're going to bring this show weekly to you on Facebook, YouTube, and as audio on all the main podcast players, and we're just going to dive into the world of punting. So I really appreciate you if you're here tuning in. If you can support in any way, just hit like if you're watching the video, subscribe on the feed wherever you get this if you can, and please give me feedback of what you would want more of and less of throughout the show as well. I truly am so passionate about sharing my punting knowledge as much as I can, so this longer format that we get in the summertime gives me that opportunity to do that. And I also just love having interesting punting conversations, you know, just like you guys who are hopefully watching this because you want to become a better. I think we all have to always try and get better all the time. And I think I'm going to learn just as much from the guests and the people that I can bring on from the world of punting and get to talk to them about a range of topics, theories, issues, their stories. Also hope that this can be entertaining. I don't think entertaining is my strong suit, but I just want to have very candid and very honest conversations. Hope you guys will enjoy it. And as I say, please comment, let me know what you think because your engagement really helps and makes this kind of stuff possible. I've got a great episode to kick off tonight. We've got the CEO of Top Sport, Tristan Merlihan, and he's directly answering your submitted questions. And there were some really good ones and we hit a range of really interesting areas. As I say, this is season 2, so we actually did 16 episodes last summer. And from time to time, I might say we already went into a certain topic in detail, so it might refer back to older episodes for you to go back and check out. Or if you never caught that season, they're still available on Facebook, YouTube, and the audio is still on the Tripod website. I just want to let you guys know the difference this time around. Last year was 16 episodes. It'll be closer to half that this time. I'm going to go for the next 2 months with these weekly episodes. Last year were closer to 40 minutes on average, where I will go closer to the hour mark this season. And tonight's episode is a little over an hour. And it's going to be a bit less segment based. Last year, we kind of did 3 to 5 segments and we did a little bit more dedication to like current events. So, you know, if the NBA was tipping off that season or a big race meet or the Big Bash, we devoted segments to kind of preview those. Whereas this time around, you know, if there's anything like that, this won't be the place for specific event previews. So it's going to be more general and have a longer shelf life, these episodes. So therefore, you guys can kind of jump into these episodes, whether you watch or listen, whenever suits you, pretty much over the summer, or people can discover these anytime and just hear interesting conversation, you know, if the topic of punting interests you. And if it does, you're probably looking for best results and best experience punting. And if you have Top Sport, I feel like you are missing out if you don't have that at your disposal. Not only do they support the show, but it's just, as I always say, you want to have access to all the best markets and best odds you can find. And additionally, we will have a custom market. So we will have the Wide World Bet of the Week. And I've got a special multi to kick off the season. I'll share at the end of the pod. And that's going to be exclusively available on Top Sport. And they're sticking with us, even though we dished them out some serious punishment this year in the NRL, giving us custom markets despite how well the mixed matchups and some other multis did. So if you don't have Top Sport, jump on, use the promo code Tripod, and then you can swing me a message, Jacob Wynn, or just the Tripod page on Facebook, Instagram, or the Tripod app after you join. They also support our group and keep our community going strong. We donated over $3,000 across 5 meaningful charities this week, which was awesome. And they also support kind of any new content that we come up with that we create from within our community. And they support us with the access that we get to CEO Tristan, giving his time. He's going to be available each week. And it's not just purely to spruik Top Sport. It really adds to this show because we get insights from behind the curtain, from, you know, the bookie perspective. And he is really open and honest and generous with the information that he shares. And so tonight we're just going straight into a big chat with Tristan, as we called it last year, behind bookie lines. And this week is Ask Tristan Anything. Tristan, Wide World of Punting Season 2. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jacob. Thanks for having us. And yeah, it's great to be back. Really enjoyed season 1 and looking forward to seeing what happens this year. It's been a big year in sport for us and for Tripod. So very happy to be involved in this series.
I really appreciate your support and your time. You're going to join me every single week. We're going to discuss a range of punting topics, issues, theories, stories. I'll be sharing plenty of my own, and we're going to have guests connected to the world of punting that are going to come in and mix in with us too. So it won't always be yourself fronting up for a whole episode, but today you are. In fact, you're kind of straight onto the hot seat because we're doing an entire episode of Ask Tristan Anything. You're facing questions that have been submitted into the Tripod group. So I'm just going to basically fire them at you, and I'm excited because there are some really good questions that we've got here. I'll share my thoughts here and there where I can, but we'll dive in for in a moment. I'll actually let me kick it off with my question as the opening question. So we kind of introduced yourself and Top Sport to the Tripod group roughly about a year ago when you jumped on to support season one of Wide World of Punting, and you've supported us ever since. So I really, you know, appreciate that. As you said, it's been a big year. And I thought, let's start there. Can you sum up 2021, how it's been, not just relating to Tripod, but your business itself? Milestones, changes, you know, hurdles, achievements, basically whatever comes to mind when you reflect back on the last 12 months.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And it's something, you know, we're really proud of the growth we've had over the last 12 months. I think we've been a company which probably people don't understand, or people that haven't known us for many years, they don't understand that we actually have been around for a while. You see a lot of the bookies that do pop up and they sort of come out of nowhere and they grow rapidly, whereas we're not in that boat. We've been a family business, which has grown from, you know, a two-man band with myself and dad, where we set it up in 2005, and, you know, we're 15, 16 years later, and now we're sort of really starting to get our name out there and a bit more prominence, and I think a lot more people are starting to know about us, and it's relationships with, you know, teams like yourself, which is assisting that, and I think the biggest thing from us is growing in that space, but also maintaining the integrity of the product that we've always had. Like, I think that's why there's been a mutual success in the relationship we've had with Tripod, because you guys got on a really hot run there, and you have been on a really hot run for a while with your winning selections and those sort of things. And we've always fronted up and taken a strong bet, and win, lose or draw, that's always been our policy, where we're happy to take punters on. It's something we pride ourselves on. We feel we've got a really sharp offering in terms of our odds and our limits and our products, and we don't shy away from taking on winning customers. So as we've grown, we've always wanted to make sure we maintain that sort of level of bookmaking integrity that we've always had, and I think we've done that. So we've been really proud of the strides we've made. Our number of customers have increased significantly over the last 12 months, our number of tickets on a given day. To put it in perspective, I think Melbourne Cup's always one of your biggest days of the year as a bookmaker, even though obviously this is more of a sports-based program, and racing's still a very focal point of it, and it's that one day where it's your flagship day. And our number of tickets doubled from last year to this year in terms of Melbourne Cup, which I think is something we're really proud of. With We're starting to roll out a number of new features. We've got a number of exciting things coming for the punters who do have Top Sport accounts. So we're nowhere near the finished product. We're still chipping away. We've got a lot of exciting things to come, and we're looking at, you know, furthering relationships like this as we go through.
Yeah, I do feel like it's a great time to be partnered with you guys, because you are growing, and you are definitely a really big weapon to have in any punter's repertoire. And looking back on this last year, you mentioned client-based growth. I mean, because I see numbers every now and then, I see people's account numbers. Is it fair to say you've grown about 50% in the number of active or number of accounts in the last 12 months?
Absolutely, yeah.
Which would be regular, your biggest ever year of growth?
Yeah, our biggest in the last, and it's an interesting one as well to compare growth, because obviously last year was probably an outlier in terms of unfortunately with the way COVID, and there was a lot of lockdowns, and there still has been a lot in this year, but I think last year's spring was probably at its peak. So everyone experienced a massive spike in terms of account numbers, and for us to be able to continue that growth this year is something we're really proud of, and I don't see that slowing down. We've got a number of exciting things coming. So yeah, our account numbers have increased by that sort of number, which I think is great. And the thing I really take a lot of pride about is that a lot of our customers, I feel they get that loyalty, where we treat our customers well, and a lot of our customers understand that, and it's the ongoing use of the account. So when people are happy with it, they understand that our product and our pricing is really strong. Our limits are really strong. You don't have to be afraid of backing a winner. So when punters come to us, they tend to stick with us, which is something we want to continue to maintain as we go through. But yeah, the account numbers have been at an all-time high. Number of tickets, which, you know, is people using the account, and then turnover has been very strong as well.
It's the same with Tripod. It's a double challenge. I want people to find out about the Tripod and the community and the content that we create, but then I also want them to stick with us if it's worthwhile for them. Other observations I've got on your year, I suppose, you have been getting way more exposure. I know yourself, you're on a massive amount of other podcasts, radio appearances, TV appearances, even TV ads for Top Sport I saw in the last few months, which may be the first ever time you've had television ads. You talked about the worst ever NRL season. You know, that would probably be something that you're going to remember when you think about 2021 for whatever reasons. And we did a bit of a NRL season recap that people can find on this same feed, but you can touch on as well, maybe did other sports, were they as bad, or how was your spring racing? How did the punters go? I guess you dodged a bullet with the big, you know, the biggest favorite in 100 years or whatever, right, getting pipped, you know, and then the Melbourne Cup, which you just touched on, and you moved into new offices as well. So you have had a really massive 2021.
Yeah, it's been a very, very big year from a whole range of different things. As you say, we are trying to spread our wings and trying to raise the awareness of the brand. You know, I genuinely feel we have one of the best brands out there in terms of pricing product, you know, and I'm sure a lot of your customers see that. So it's just trying to raise that awareness. And yeah, I have actively been trying to talk to a number of different outlets to try to get that message across, which has been, you know, I think contributed to the growth we've experienced. And then in terms of the results, yeah, the rugby league season was a tricky one. It was one of those ones where, you know, there was so much difference in the rules and the favourites just being so dominant as we went into a deep dive. So we won't go into that too much. But yeah, the rugby league one was a tricky one results wise. AFL on the flip side, it was a really positive year. And you know, we introduced our same game multi primarily for those two codes at the start of the year, which saw enormous growth. We brought it out for rugby union. We'll have it out for cricket by the start of the Big Bash as well. So we're growing a number of these products, which I think are really good. But from a P&L side of things, yeah, rugby league was tough. AFL was really good. And then just growing out a number of other areas. The spring carnival was a really interesting month and a half when it was at its peak. The Melbourne Cup was our biggest day we've had for a long time. That was a really, really good day. On the back of Derby Day being a tough day, Cox Plate Day was good. But the worst day I've had in a long time was the Caulfield Cup Everest Day. It was just absolutely favourite after favourite truckloaded, and we prided ourselves in bringing out a product where we bet every customer on the planet to win 50,000 in that last 30 minutes of all of those feature races. And if you have a look at some of the goes, there was some really sustained goes, particularly the Derby. The Derby winner was absolutely smashed in that last half an hour. Incentivised, as we know, it went under in the Melbourne Cup, but it was truckloaded in the Caulfield Cup, the Everest winner, Nature Strip. So they will. Probably we got ourselves into a tricky spot at the start of the carnival with a lot of those plunges coming off, which we probably felt the brunt of more than anyone else. But then on the flip side, when incentivised, we offered best of the best to win some big numbers, which all the pros jumped in on and incentivised in that sort of regard. So we got a good chunk of it back on that day, which is good. But it's one of those things. You've got to have your strategy. You've got to stick with it. Whether you're a punter or a bookmaker, we're happy to take on favourites in those big races. And when they win, you know, you're happy to go down in those battles. And when they get beat, you deserve to get the reward out of it as well. Same as when you're punting. You've got to look at it from a long-term perspective. You've got to have your plan in place, and we do, and we're going to continue that going forward. But, yeah, the spring's been great. And more importantly, we're really looking forward to what we can do and improve on for next year. We know some things we need to improve on, whether that be UI experience with the app, whether it be more products, more stuff for customers. You know, we got our Top Sport card coming as well, so there's plenty of things there that for our members are going to get benefits out of it going forward, and we're just hoping to keep chipping away and growing the brand over the next 6, 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I think another great question, but we might save because we've got the time in upcoming episodes, will be to talk more about goals for 2022 and the future. And you guys are great with being responsive to feedback as well. And, you know, I pass on feedback from punters, and I am a punter myself. And you are always talking about things that are in the work or things you're looking to improve as well. But at this time of the year, as you kind of touched on with spring racing kind of having wound down now, you can exhale somewhat. You can start looking forward a little bit. That's what gives us the opportunity to get a little bit more of your time. I don't know how you do it with you mentioned all the kind of media appearances that you do, but we appreciate it. So that gives us the time to have chats like we're having today. So let's jump into the group submitted questions now. And this should be a fun one to kick us off. Hold on.
While you're getting it up, I just wanted to thank all the members out there that did submit some questions. Like, and as you touched on, like, I pride myself on being able to answer questions or provide. If customers give us feedback, and as long as it's balanced feedback, we'll always give our point of view as to why we do things a certain way or what we know we need to do better. So never ever hesitate. If you're one of our customers, shoot us an email, send us a message. We want to make our product better all the time. So any feedback, whether that be questions, you know, things you want to see on the site, we're never ever hesitant to answer that or give or justify why we can't do it or give you a timeline on when we hope to have it in place. So and just to see the influx of questions, you know, there's some funny ones in there, there's some you know, some good ones and there's some really well thought out questions as well. So very happy and looking forward to going through them all.
Yeah, so am I. We'll start right here. This should be a fun one. Paul Murray asks, what's your biggest payout that you've ever made? And perhaps what's the biggest payout you've ever dodged, say, just by the narrowest margin, like a one leg loss? Got any stories to share with that one?
Yeah, well, our biggest payout was back when we were in our early years of bookmaking. It was around the 2000 and I think it might have been the 2008 season when Melbourne won the comp. One of our customers, he was an older customer, he was in his 80s or 90s, and he used to have 200,000 on teams to win the comp every year, and he just went bang straight on Melbourne, 200,000 to win the comp at $6.50. And this was 10, 15 years ago when we certainly weren't the size business we are now. So he's backed them to win $1.1 million, and they shot very straight, and that was our worst result by a long way in terms of a single bet. We've had customers have, you know, standalone wages on particular games and these sort of things, which, you know, we've taken plenty of million-dollar bets over the time on cricket and NFL and these sort of things. But generally, you can sort of lay your other side or do a few things to make sure your liability's in train. But when someone goes whack on an outright bet, it is a bit more difficult to manage. But in terms of the one that always sigh a little bit and we got out of trouble in some respects, one that comes to mind is the Olympics wager that you guys had with us earlier in the year, where we were very lucky to dodge a bullet there. It was really well supported. It was obviously at the big price where Japan just got that last gold medal. So I won't rub any salts into the wounds of any of the punters out there listening, but that was a really fun bet to be involved in. But the one that reminds me, and it probably goes back to show, you know, from a punting perspective, how to learn to grow and to take lessons and to do this. When I was just starting, it was 2008, we were bookmaking and it was the last round of the regular season. And one of our customers had a really sizable multi. He backed this five or six leg multi to win 300,000 or 400,000 at the time. And the last leg was Canberra against the Canterbury Bulldogs. And I don't know if you remember back in those days, but the games were sort of played in a concurrent fashion, and there was three games on in the Sunday afternoon, and you didn't know your position, but the market was sort of shifting, and the line he took was -18.5 as the last leg, where he took Canberra -18.5. Canterbury were going to run last in this season. They were the worst team in the comp by some margin. Canberra needed a win to make the finals, so the expectation was Canberra were going to blow them away. He had the -8.5. The line shifted to 20.5 on game day. So we've moved the line to 20.5 with the market, and we've taken a heap of bets at the plus to, you know, to A, balance the book, but we weren't aware that this multi was sort of mounting up to be such a significant figure. And as the games were getting resulted, our book got to a point where I remember looking at it once the game started and almost fell off my chair, because we were standing the 20 point for 800,000 and we didn't have, you know, really much of a position in any of the other aspects of the game. I was only about 20 at the time. My dad went off to watch the Titans play. He wasn't aware of the situation, just myself and him running the show at that time. And he thought we just had a normal Sunday afternoon book. And luckily he doesn't have Facebook, because he won't be watching this, and he still doesn't know the actual liability of the situation. But it got to a really big number. And I don't know, for people who weren't watching the game, the Bulldogs actually jumped out to about a 20-0 lead. So they were 18.5-point underdogs and they jumped out to a 20-point lead. So I wasn't concerned about the result at all. I was thinking, oh, well, I've dodged a bullet here. Thanks for that. And then Canberra started rolling and they put on some points. They put on some points. And anyway, they just really, they overtook the Bulldogs late, and they got to a 52 to, they got up to a 24-point lead. So they're well in front of the line, although we're going to have a little loss on here. And they were attacking the goal line in the last 2 minutes. The Raiders were, so they're going to go 30 points up. So I didn't think it was anything to worry about. And then the Bulldogs got an intercept, and they looked like they were going to run the length of the field and score under the post, which would have brought the score down to 18. So again, it wasn't a problem. And the winger who took the intercept tripped over, and he fell over about 5 metres out from the goal line. and I got tackled, and then they spread the ball wide and scored in the corner. So it's on the bell and they're 20 points up. And I'm thinking, well, at least I got Hazem Al-Mazri here to kick the winning goal for me. And because it was the last game of the season, they've thrown the ball to Corey Hughes. And my heart's just sunk. I thought, oh, we've got no chance. So this was sitting on the 20-point number, and he just went back and slotted it straight over the sticks. And they got the result by 18. So we still lost on the game, but we dodged a massive bullet. And I probably might not be sitting here telling you the story if that had gone the other way, if Dad had known about the outcome. But that's the one that always stands out in my mind, just the way it all happened, the error in the bookmaking, the ordinary facet of it. And then we dodged a really big bullet late and got out of trouble.
His heart goes out to that punter out there, especially if you're down 20-0, but then you get to the point where you're laying 18 and a half and you get in front. You just think that tidal wave's going to continue. You definitely don't expect to get backdoored like that. And then for it to all come down, that multi to come down to a sideline conversion by a fill-in kicker and then to lose it, that is brutal. You mentioned Melbourne Storm. I think Manly won the comp in 08, Storm won in 07 and 09, so it must have been either of those where you said you had a couple hundred thousand by someone. I don't know if you can try and claim that money back now we know those teams were over the cap or not, or if you just got to wear that. But if people like those kind of stories as well, I should actually refer to Wild World of Punting last year. You can look up the list on YouTube there. We actually talked about $1 million bets that you've taken. So those are a couple of cool stories I hadn't heard before. But if people want more, there's been several times where you guys have been sweating a fair bit in the office and it goes both ways. And you've given two examples there. That's cool. Here's a different one from Daniel. He asked, if every punter was to withdraw their money at the same time, could the bookies cover it? Or is it tied up in investments? I find this fascinating, actually. Like, what really happens behind the scenes with everybody's money?
Yeah, well, it's a funny one. So it actually, you know, almost came to, you know, the fruition when everything stopped. You know, when obviously with COVID and the NRL and AFL season stopped, obviously sport around the world came to a halt, and a lot of punters pulled out a lot of their money because there was no point in sitting in there last year. So obviously with racing still going on, it still kept people active in that space. But it's a really interesting question because we like anyone, you know, you have your money sitting in an account and you put it into secured investments or term deposits and these sort of things. And when it happened very quickly, we had to sort of make sure we could access those funds. So to put everyone's minds at ease, everyone that's got a bookmaker's license, you are licensed depending on the state you're in. You're licensed by the bookies co-op. So you have to put up security so that if something were to go wrong and punters all wanted to withdraw their money and a bookmaker wasn't able to pay it, there is some security there for the punters. So we always make sure we have the amount of funds required to cover all of our liabilities in any one stage. There is a requirement also in New South Wales, which is where we're licensed, to ensure that any futures bet is put aside into a separate account so that it's guaranteed there, so that if it needs to be paid on the next day, that we've got the funds available to be paid. Obviously, every state's a little bit different in how they manage it, but certainly New South Wales is very good in that respect. I don't think they've had a bookie default for 25, 30 years. So I think it's a really good thing for the punters out there to be happy that they've got the security there. I guess that's the only thing, just to be mindful, bookies that are popping up, and particularly the international ones, which really isn't an issue anymore since the rules are coming, you can't really bet offshore, but just make sure you do your due diligence. There's some goodwill behind a company that have been operating for an extensive amount of time, or you can be comfortable you've got your funds in there, because, you know, like we saw with season stopping and racing potentially stopping, there is always a chance where that influx can happen, and you don't want to be in a position where you've got your funds sitting somewhere and you can't get access to them. But certainly from our point of view, there's never any dramas in that space.
That's interesting. I didn't even know for sure that you guys actually do invest it. I suppose you should do the best thing you can with the money available to you. What about, do you like cash reserves? Like what is there, like a nightmare scenario that, like, not only do you need to physically be able to cover the sum of all balances of all customers, but what if they all won on a given day? Like, you know, do you have to have like cash reserves to cover X above, you know, the amount that you're holding?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you need to make sure that, you know, from a bookmaking point of view, you've got the ability that if everything went pear-shaped, you can sustain those losses. So that's something we've built over a long period of time. And that's where, with those couple of stories I was referring to earlier, where a big loss back in the day was obviously a lot scarier than since we've been around for 10 or 15 years and you've got that bank behind you. And that's probably the, you know, some of the newer bookmakers who pop up, they've got to make sure they've got the ability to ride out the wild swings, because you know, any punter can get on a winning run. You know, any day can have a myriad of favourites win or well-supported runners win. So, yeah, you have to make sure you've got that backing behind you, that if everything goes, you know, the wrong way, you've got the ability to pay your dues. And that's where the bookies co-op does come in as well. Like, they're very strict on who they approve and who they license. And it's a review process every year or every couple of years, I think, where it's based on your turnover. And there's obviously some inbuilt variance to make sure that they've got a coverage up to X amount where you buy shares into the co-op, so to speak. So, because the last thing the industry as a whole wants is for someone to go under and not be able to pay their debts. Like, because if someone else went under that isn't us, it's going to have a negative reflection on us as well. So everyone's of the same interest that you want to make sure that can never happen, because it's just the worst thing that can possibly occur for anyone in our industry is if someone does the wrong thing and punters are out of pocket and obviously are left hard done by, and then the whole industry, you know, suffers on the back of it.
That's really good to know. And it's actually cool because our audience has the opportunity to tune in live. I thought we could actually put it to the test. So I thought everyone who's watching now, pull out your TopSport account and we're going to hit withdraw in 3, 2, 1. Oh, only joking there, mate.
I was just going to have to hang up the call and jump into cab at the airport.
Always up to people if you want to do that, but sorry, I'm not saying everyone do that. Just wanted to make Tristan sweat a little bit. Here's a lighthearted question. How many, Ike asked how many bonus bets he'd get if he got a TopSport tattoo.
Yeah,
so you cannot give a bonus bet to entice someone joining an account, but I don't know what the legislation is on getting a tattoo. And you know, you got to be creative this day and age to get attention.
Yeah, well, if you want to go out there and get a tattoo and you can put it on your social media, I'll make sure we look after it. Whatever the cost of that tattoo is, we'll reimburse it in bonus bets. So we're able to do that to existing customers. But if you saw on that chain of comments, it's an interesting story. One of the boys in our office, actually, I tagged him in, it's Scott, and he's been one of our workers for a long time. He does a really good job. He's a Mad Bulldogs fan, which is probably the biggest disappointment for him. But he actually we had a little we were going through a pretty ordinary run in the office, and basically I said to the boys, all right, if we have a winning day here and we get over a certain figure, then we have to collectively go and get a tattoo. So this was only about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I was going to set a date to it, a bit of a team building experience, and we're about to lock that date in the next couple of weeks. But Scotty raced out and got his own tattoo, and he's got it front and centre to show his passion for the team. And I think it got infected when he got it, so it might have cost him a little bit more. But yeah, if any of the punters, if you want to get that tattoo, send us a message. We'll make sure we promote it and we'll look after you.
Just like you punt responsibly, get tattoos responsibly. I suppose it's that heart rate. He could get the heart rate across his chest or something like that. Funny, tattoos are topical because I shared the random AF multi and someone was so adamant that my selection of Jake Paul, and I'll talk all about the multi right at the end of this pod, has no chance of winning, that he's vowed to get tripod tattooed on his peen, as he said. So, well, I guess, yeah, there could be some new tattoos in the groups or something interesting for people to look out for. Matt Blanche asks, are you scared of Picklebet? And I threw this question in there too because I thought it opens up an interesting topic of esports. So you can answer this however you like, right? Because my understanding, I'm not too familiar. I know nothing about esports or that bookie, but I just know that bookies are having to create more and more markets, and there is a demand and there is a movement of people that follow this and punt on it, I presume. And it's so unique that I feel like, how do you know what to make the odds or what to make of money coming for a certain selection or to get all your derivative markets right and so on. So how have you kind of handled this?
Now, esports is something that is something we need to grow on, we need to improve on, and we actually were never able to bet on esports up until probably 18 months ago, 2 years ago. It wasn't a legalized betting product in New South Wales. We went and got it approved, and we've been growing that product. We've actually taken a lot of intel, and we've been growing it out quite significantly. We know we aren't market leaders in that space, but we're really trying to uphold our core pillars of the brand, where when the internationals played there a month or so ago, we went out there and we publicized it. We're betting all customers to win 10,000 on any one of the markets. So we were taking big bets. We've got a couple of the guys in the office who are quite good on the esports side of it, and they take ownership of the brand, and it's something they're actively wanting to improve next year. And I really think next year our esports product's going to be a pretty exciting one. I don't want to be commenting on it too much because I'm going to not do it justice, because I don't really know too much about it. But in terms of, yeah, that there are some bookies out there that are specialising in it. There's a lot of punters out there that love it and are fanatical about it. And it's like the likes of your rugby league or AFL, it's just another sport there. There's a demand for it. There's a market for it. And like any sport, you just need to chip away at it and improve your product and take lead of other people who are leading the market in it.
Probably another sport that thrived with the timing of COVID outbreak as well, something that carried on, was able to obviously still be sustained. And then you talk about getting it approved to be able to take bets on it. And suddenly, I mean, I know I found myself this, I guess it's esports. I was watching NBA players play 2K against each other, televised on ESPN and stuff like that. And you could bet on that. So it's a crazy world, but you got to keep up. But it's cool that you got expertise in-house, because I even get people questioning, like, you know, is it possible for more markets to be available in this and that area? So, you know, the more you can expand as well, that helps you. And that's a good thing about, you're talking about competition, is that competition makes each bookie, you know, want to be better to create the best offering for your customers. Now, here's another interesting topic. So it's been asked by Marcio, are you going to be like other bookies and promo ban customers? And then there's a follow-up from Sammy, and it's, and if you do promo ban, like, can you talk about ratios of promo versus normal? And I know, I'll hand over to you to how you want to address this. I know this is a sensitive topic purely because there are limitations on what either you or I can say, just because legally, like, promos are something that can't be kind of openly advertised to people, because it may be seen that you're putting up something to entice someone to make an account. So I know you can't really talk about anything specific, but in general, you can talk about your philosophy and let us know what you can say.
Yeah, for sure. And that is, the legislation is obviously pretty strict at the moment on inducement, which is a good thing for me. Like, you know, I love the industry, and I don't want people to be, you know, induced into opening accounts and all that. So we completely respect what the marketplace is doing in that regard. But in terms of how we intend to move forward, we've always had the policy, and nothing has changed, nothing will change, that we're a very fair bookmaker. But fairness goes a couple of ways too. So basically, from our point of view, we differentiate ourselves from the market by any of the promos that we do, which, you know, customers can see when they are logged in of what we do offer. We never ever restrict them to customers based on the profitability of their account, where some of the other competitors potentially might remove promotions or things from certain customers because they're backing too many winners. I can absolutely assure you that will never, ever, ever be the case with us. That's something we're absolutely determined to maintain. No matter how big we get or no matter how much following we get, we always want to uphold that, those core pillars that you don't need to be afraid of backing winners with us. You won't get your promos removed. You won't get, you know, the different things removed from your account. That's something that's important. However, we do want anything we release, we have a fair play policy, where, you know, you've got to have a 50% turnover on promo markets to non-promo markets, which I think is pretty fair. I think it's important that punters out there understand that if people are just going around from shop to shop and purely betting on promos, it hurts the genuine customers who are having, you know, 10 bets a weekend and having five or six promo bets and having their other bets at the same time, which, you know, you want punters to act in the spirit of what's there, that they're there to reward regular customers who bet regularly on the course of an NRL or an NFL weekend. And that's our mentality on it. And that's something we have always had in place, and we will continue to have in place, where, you know, as long as punters are being fair and giving us an even share of business and not rolling through multiple accounts. I think that's the thing that not just us, but a lot of other bookmakers, you know, get frustrated by, when, you know, someone, like if a promo has a maximum stake of $200 and it's obvious that someone's wanting to invest $2,000 on and going through 10 individual accounts. That's certainly not in the spirit of the promo. So, you know, a lot of our genuine and winning customers might have a $500 bet, and they'll have $200 on the promo market and $300 on the regular line. And we obviously bet very aggressive normal markets too. So that to us is the spirit of it. That's how we'll always maintain it. But in terms of removing promos purely on the back of customers backing winners, that'll never happen.
Anything that we kind of do with that, whether it be these longer shot multis, these value plays, or a good example that, you know, people are well aware of is the mixed matchup every week. I don't really think of it like a promo. I know that you have a max bet on those, but obviously, like, I think it's important for people to understand that's more so to protect the price. That you've got, like, you know, a price that you're willing to stand by, and you've obviously, every bookie's going to have a liability limit on any price, and we want to allow the maximum number of people that follow along the show and have a genuine punt to get on at that price. Because if we don't, I know there's people out there that would love to have huge, you know, four or five figure bets on some of these mixed matchups, And they will feel that they should have a right to do that. But then it becomes like any other bet where the odds can move if it gets smashed and then other people miss out. So I think it's more so maybe people should understand that. And what you talked about there with multiple accounts, maybe you could touch on the new rule that you are going to implement next year, because maybe we can share with people like what was an issue this year was the success of the mixed matchup word was getting out, I guess, to almost like syndicates that were, you know, made people, and this is something we could touch on throughout the season, is that you do a degree of account profiling, I suppose. You have to kind of know who's betting with you. And it was clear to you that you had a heap of synchronized accounts that weren't really punters, but were all having max stake on the mixed matchup. And whether it is a group of people or one individual, effectively getting himself 10 grand on a mixed matchup, like you told me someone had on the Super Saturday. Saturday Slayer multi with all the big favorites and stuff. You know, so there could be people out there that feel that's their right. The issue is really just that those people will spoil it for everyone else if they're manufacturing huge amounts on it themselves, because we should appreciate that you're putting up, you know, real decent odds and taking solid bets from a large number of people following. But if a few individuals want to have massive bets, that's just going to take away from what everyone else can get a piece of. And I do, you know, some people do complain to me, oh, that's not fair. I bet 1,000 or I bet 5,000 a game. To me, I kind of say, well, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, you can't have 5 grand on a mixed matchup, but if you're betting 5,000 a game and you're following the tripod tips throughout a season, you're probably benefiting more money than those people that are having their $200 per game, to be honest. So I can only apologize so much to people. Hey, you're fortunate enough to have a bankroll that allows you to bet that big. Unfortunately, you're not going to get 5,000 on absolutely anything you want. But can you reflect on that as well? That's why you've had to bring in a new rule that just kind of states if someone's obviously playing nothing but, you know, a max limit plays to generate larger stakes, then that is the one occasion where you would not accept those bets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I make no apologies for that. And we are very, very fair. And we didn't want to bring it into the middle of the season. We didn't want to look like we're kicking our wickets over and being upset. But as I touched on, like for us, if someone's going to have 10 different accounts and max stake on them and they're the only activity you're getting on it, then, you know, it affects everyone else. Because what the reality of the situation is, as you say, they're not promos in the sense of the word. But when we put a price up about an option, we hold that price. And, you know, the markets can move one way or the other. And obviously, if you've got a lot of punters that are with the Saturday Slayer, for example, where, you know, you liked all the three favourites on that given day and you know, punters were taking that, but the lines move significantly in the direction of that those options. And I think it was a $3 option or $3.50.
Yeah,
or something
I think
like
it was about $3.25, something like that, for 100 stake.
Yeah, it's 100 stake. But if we had to reprice that up on Saturday morning at what the true odds, obviously when we chat about the odds pre you coming on the show for the week and we come up with a price of what we feel is fair on both sides, and I know you've mentioned that, there's always a bit of back and forth. You're trying to get the best price possible. We're trying to give a fair price from our perspective as well, and it's a very fair process. But things happen throughout the course of the week and there was no players out, but it was just that by and whole, the marketplace probably undervalued.
I think all three lines were around 17 or 18 when I negotiated the play with you on Wednesday. By game day, they were all closer to 20. Yep. And then because it was three games combined, it's like if you added up the three lines, it was more than a converted try. It's probably like a 7 or 8 point, you know, collective move. But you guys were still committing to the 325. Which is one issue. The other being that I liked all the big favorites that day, which is very popular among other people that like, yeah, hell yeah, I want to get involved in that too. So it was kind of a perfect storm. I know you would have probably had a massive laugh in the team if it fell short, because it nearly did. We needed Penrith to win by about 2 points in the final game. They only hung on and won by 4 or 6 in the end. Brisbane was pushing them down to the wire, and you would have said, well, that serves you right to the person that did manufacture 10 grand on that bet alone. But that was one that hurt you guys. And that kind of rolls into the next question.
Before we finish it, and just on the point to the punters out there that like having their $5,000 and $6,000 bets, like the reality of the scenario is if they're following through your specifics and they're listening to how you justify and explain the bets, which you do very, very well, there's always different plays to take at the right market price. Like if you're taking Newcastle to outscore Manly in a given week, and we have our limit on the mixed matchup because we're holding that price there. There's certainly ways to either follow the overs on the Newcastle option or follow the unders on the Manly option, where we bet our normal strong stakes. So, you know, from that side of it, like, and we'll never ever, if punters are going out there and they're taking different options as way away from just the mixed matchup, it's where someone, instead of having their 200 on that and maybe 500 on the overs for Newcastle and 500 on the unders for Manly, or however they want to play it to maximise their unit strategy, it's going out and having five different accounts all coming through and max betting it. So that's the difference. Like, the way you justify your plays is very impressive, and it gives punters out there that just don't want to, that don't need to just go out there and hit the max bet on those promo options. It's going around and having a look and saying, well, you know, the tripod team like this and the tripod plays this. And there's so many different ways to utilise. And as long as you're giving us a fair share of action on a number of different markets, it's never, ever going to be an issue, no matter if you guys go 20-0 next year. So it's from that side, I just want to make sure people understand that it's not a case of us upset because punters are winning. It's more so, it's important for the general group and the community. I understand our community base, the tripod group, is that it's going to affect the bigger group if people out there get greedy and try to do the wrong thing. So that's the only reason we brought that rule in, and we brought it in at the end of the season, so there's no lack of spirit to it. But that's always been our mentality, and hopefully that's fair from all points of view.
That's a great point. I'm glad you made that too, because like, if someone's betting 5,000 per NRL game, as some people claim to do, well, not just claim, I'm sure you see it does happen. It's like throughout a season following a tripod, it only has to be one game where someone liked the side and I'm just against it. And if I talk you out of one play that might have lost throughout a season where we won 62% of our best bets, like that's, you know, avoiding a losing play, there's 5,000 extra in your pocket right there. Or what you touched on there, if I'm saying I like Newcastle to outscore the Raiders this weekend, whether that would push you away from the Raiders if you liked them, or onto their opponent, or make you like Newcastle, or, you know, the beauty of the mixed matchup was I didn't have to be right on both aspects. If I was right on both sides, it's a winner. But I could be wrong on both, but less wrong on one. Or I could be right on both, but, you know, I could be right on one, wrong on the other. But as long as I'm more right, you know. But I do think for sure, we won 70% of these through the season. If you multied the over on the team I was on into the under, the team that I was opposing, you would have made a good profit doing it that way. So that's what you're talking about. Like, you can derive even more value out of someone's tip than purely just how much you're having on that exact bet. And that rolls into Greg's question, which was about, can you touch on the best and worst money spinners in terms of different sports or maybe different like bet types?
Yeah, for us, it's a tricky question, because normally I'd say rugby league is one of our best results in terms of bookmaking, but that didn't happen to go that way. But I guess from our point of view, it's trying to take bets and big bets at the most efficient time. So when you've got big markets where they're efficient markets like rugby league, you are happy taking bigger bets. Multis, obviously, if punters are backing, you know, a lot of favourites and those sort of things, they're ones we're happy to take on. The ones where we battle a little bit are the smaller sports, the more obscure sports, where punters who are, you know, really strategic and refined in those sort of things, they can get an edge about us. We've only got so many guys on the team. We've only got so many guys that can have a knowledge about so many different sports. And there certainly is a niche out there for punters to look at some of these more obscure options and find a way to beat not just us, but anyone out there in the marketplace. And that's something we pride ourselves on. We bet solid limits on all of these sports. Obviously, if you've got a Super Bowl and you've got a Uruguayan Division II basketball league, we're not going to take the same size bets on it. But we do pride ourselves on, if we've got a match up on the board, we're happy to bet to lose 500, you know, to people, as long as they're playing the game and being fair. So I guess to answer the question, we like taking bets on the bigger top end sports late, and that's where we generally make our margin more so. And the smaller sports are the ones we sort of battle with a little bit.
That raises a really interesting point that I think I could make here as well. So you'll let anybody bet to win $500 on any market that you've, you know, got up, right? I mean, I've devoted a long period of time to trying to handicap the NRL as well as I can, and I love it, right? But, you know, it's not the easiest sport to beat because plenty of other people know a lot about it too. If I devoted the same amount of time and amount of years that I have to being a WNBL expert, you know, you could probably find bigger edges and still bet to win 500 on every one of those. So I think, like, someone out there, I think it comes down to, like, people probably enjoy watching the NBA more than like the WNBL or whatever. So they want to bet on the sport they enjoy more, but there's more knowledge and more liquidity in those sports, so they're harder to beat. So I think it does open up an opportunity. If anyone's out there that is really into obscure sports, like we got a guy who's real gun tipping hockey, you know, it's just a little bit niche in our group. And I actually think there's extra advantages in that because you're right, your team only has, you know, so many sets of eyes and so much knowledge to make the numbers as sharp as they can. And when you're not taking that same volume of money and bets, you're naturally maybe going to be more beatable on some of the more obscure sports. Hey, I just mentioned we had a hockey expert in our group. The very next question is from Lockie Hockey Hall. So he gets a shout out now, and he's asked a question that we can also tie into the NFL, which is current, but it's relevant for NRL too or any sport. And it's talking about home field advantage, a specific aspect that we also talked about last year's Wide World of Punting, and how you price that into a line or how that affects the odds. And his question is whether that has changed in the last 5 years. There's definitely a school of thought that home field advantage is diminishing. So we can talk about why that might be or how you feel about that. He said NRL or other sports, maybe even we'll start with NFL. Can you talk about in your office what you value kind of home field advantage as in the NFL and what considerations have gone into that? And have you noticed this trend that it definitely seems to be less pronounced than it was in the past?
Yeah, I think it's certainly become less pronounced. I think there's a number of elements to look at. It's obviously teams have been more used to travelling or playing in neutral venues or not at home. They're more used to being on the road. I think there's also the element is are there going to be fans in these stadiums? You know, some stadiums obviously do have fans, some don't. There's always a different dynamic because, you know, if you play at Seattle and they've got their full house of fans, it's a lot different to if you're playing at Seattle but no fans. And same as with any sport. You know, so I certainly feel that the home ground advantage has taken a step back a little bit, the weather and all these sort of conditions. So it's something that we don't have a real hard and fast rule. It's just identifying and looking at the game and looking at the parameters around it. Is it a full house? Is it half? You know, has this team been on the road? Is it? So there's a lot of things that come into it. But certainly in a nutshell, yeah, the home ground advantage is a lot less than what it's been. And that's just not in NFL and NRL, it's across the board. I think we saw with the NBA last year where all the games were played in a certain in the hub. You know, like teams are more used to playing outside of the comforts of their own home now. So I think that's only going to be, you know, it's only going to become more pronounced over the next little bit too.
Yeah, NFL and NRL are similar. I mean, the school of thought or the rule of thumb used to always be home field is worth three, but there's obviously exceptions. Some teams could even have been worth more, like you mentioned, Seattle, really loud crowds or, you know, like different situations where it's worth even more than three. And then some teams that really didn't have a strong home advantage could be worth a little under three. But now I'm hearing that a lot of handicappers are just calling it closer to 1 point, between 1 and 2 points. And that's important because what you think it's worth factors into what you think the odds and what you think the line should be. And you're right, like home advantage is an advantage for several reasons. So you kind of break it down. So like, you know, travel that is imposed on the opponent is somewhat of a disadvantage because it's time they're going to spend on a plane or whatever. But, you know, with modern technology and private jets and, you know, the places that these guys get to stay overnight and the, you know, the quality of hotel room and whatnot, like that's reduced from what travel used to be, you know, decades ago. And then the other variable is, are these crowds full? Obviously, ever since COVID hit, we've seen like home advantage is going to be diminished because you don't have really loud crowds, and whether that's motivating factor and influence on referee decisions, there's lots of reasons why home teams benefit from that. And we saw that home ground wasn't worth as much in the NRL as well when you had either no crowds or smaller crowds. And I'll get a little bit crude as well, but I read an article years ago that said that the whole Tinder and Instagram DMs has changed the mentality of players who are on the road, who maybe if they wanted to meet local girls, they had to go out to the clubs in that city and experience the nightlife. And now it's a little bit more easier to hook up with people that you might want to spend time with. And as a result, we've also seen road teams haven't suffered as much as what they might have been, where a team might spend a road trip in Miami or something and look really, really flat the next day. Maybe they're not spending as much time out partying, drinking. Hey, I'll just throw that in the mix. You got any other ideas on that one, or you want to move on?
I think I'll let you sum that one up. So yeah, it sounds like a good rationale.
No worries. Well, we've got a question here from Gerard. And Gerard has asked, and this is another question to do with promos. We'll see if there's anything extra we can add here. But when it comes to offering a promotional price, how much does that actually eat into your profit loss margin? And also when with promos that are like a really small max bet, for example, $20, he says, what's the intention of those? Is it just designed to actually make the punter win, but then you're banking on them turning over the cash?
Yeah, and it's a tricky one. And obviously, you know, as we touched on earlier, you can sort of only talk about so many things in terms of promotions, which, you know, like, you know, but it's the same in all aspects of the marketplace where you log into your account and you see what's available, or you may get sent some offers because obviously once someone's got an account, you can mention certain things. But in terms of from our point of view, as I touched on, because we offer every single customer the same offering, no matter if they're winning punters or otherwise, and it does bite into your margin, and it is something that you need in order to continue to offer them. You know, you need your regulars to be betting on other options that come with it. So, and they're there to reward your regular customers and to your users to give them a benefit and to say thank you for using our site. And then in terms of the smaller based offering, like we've never really gone down that route. So I sort of can't comment exactly on the mentality of it, because for me, I don't see much merit in offering a promo where it's completely against what we stand for in terms of giving people a fair bet. You know, like I've seen some out there where you could bet Winks to win a race at $5 when it was $1.04, but you could have $10 on it or $20. So I guess that's the type of offering that he's asking about there. And it is one of those things where that would be the mentality to get people to try out the site. And I think a lot of those were probably much more prevalent when you could advertise those sort of things more freely. So it was a case of bringing punters to your website to try out, and then for maybe some of those agencies to work out which customers they wanted to continue to facilitate. So they're probably the ones that I think is a good aspect why they have been removed a little bit from the marketplace. We certainly never went down that direction, but that would be the mentality. And I think, you know, whenever we offer something which is a bit different to our offering on the board, it's not as though we've never gone down that mantra of just giving out free cash, because I don't think that's the best way for our business to sell itself. Like, I don't think we can differentiate ourselves. That's why with all of the mixed matchup, it's about offering a very fair price to punters to get on there and for you to justify your reasoning. So we prefer to go down that route as opposed to, you know, the fool's gold almost to some of those other promos.
Yeah, I was going to say it didn't really come to mind for me of you guys offering those type of bets, but I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, and I've seen it as well. $20 you can have on Winks to win or something, double your money, but that's a pretty small limit. And then it goes back to, you know, are those bookies letting everyone even at that? Often it's not. It's only the people that they know are going to definitely put it back through. And when it comes to, yeah, going back to the mixed matchups that we talked about before, it's like, well, some of them might be like the value plays might be a max of $50 or max 100, but these are you can still get, you know, you can still bet to win $200, $300, $400, $500 on these. So which for most punters, I'd say for 95% of people, that's as much as they'd want to bet at that type of odds. So I think we talked about how that's pretty good, and nobody's getting kind of cut off from those. What have we got next? A question from Siebes, who asks about cryptocurrency. So this will be an interesting one. We understand it's rising, and you do hear about bookies that do accept bets in crypto, maybe not in Australia, so maybe there's a legal aspect to that. But what's your thoughts on taking bets on cryptocurrencies or how the regulations work? And could it be something that, or actually, a second part question was, and this could be crypto, but I reckon this could apply to anything, taking bets on markets going up or down? Because I know that there are places, maybe again, I don't know if it's Australia based, where people actually bet on markets. That's a whole other kettle of fish. But where do you guys sit on that argument?
Yeah, so with the cryptocurrency, it certainly is a question we get asked a little bit, and I don't have all the answers to it. I'm surprised it probably hasn't come in here, but obviously there's a regulatory point of view. There's a lot of items that have to be passed, but I certainly feel at some stage it will be in Australia. I think it probably has to be, and you know, we will certainly be very keen to explore that, and if there's a way we can push it, like it certainly, in my view, it's something that will add another string to the bow of punters to be able to, you know, wager in their choice of currency. So, and then in terms of offering markets on different items, like it's an interesting one. You know, like it's something we probably don't have the expertise. There's so many people that spend a lot of time you know, monitoring these things, and it's something you need to be right on the ball. So it's something, you know, as I said, we're looking at evolving our product range in a number of different assets, in other different aspects. So we probably are going to look at it at some point down the line, but it's something we know we have to be right on the ball. And we've always maintained that mentality that we only want to offer markets that we're very comfortable taking a strong bet on. And something like the financial markets, they can jump around so much, and you need to be right on top of it. And we don't ever want to get to the phase where we put markets up and we're not prepared to take a bet. So until we're in the point of view where we can give it the respect it deserves and give it the attention it deserves, then, you know, we won't be doing that at this point. But it's certainly something as we grow the team and have specific areas that we can, you know, roll out, then we definitely be looking at it. But yeah, there's always been the, you know, the financial rate and those sort of things that were a very popular market for a period of time, and it just brings in another audience of punters as well. So it's certainly something down the line we will definitely look into.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's like if you're worried that interest rates are going to go up or something, I thought maybe you could bet on them going up, and then if they do go up, at least you're going to win your bet. But you're right, like people can bet on just about anything these days. In fact, the next question is from Mateos the Padonis, who wants to know if you've got a hot tip on the winner of The Bachelorette. And that, as much as that might sound like a joke, you do take bets on reality TV, don't you? So I guess you probably shouldn't actually, you probably shouldn't say too much, because the crazy part of reality, tell me if I'm wrong, but we kind of had this discussion about reality TV last year as well on an episode. You guys might take a bunch of bets all on a certain reality TV contestant. You might kind of get a bit of inside tip off that it's highly likely that that contestant might have success. So you might be sitting there actually knowing who wins The Bachelorette or having a pretty good idea. I don't know if you should spoil it.
Well, you've just hit the nail on the head just there. And we actually got into a little bit of trouble on our Twitter account a while back because we had an auto tweet set up and we did have The Bachelorette or The Voice or one of the MasterChef. It might have been in our next to go markets, and it was getting auto tweeted out, and there was a favourite there at $1.04, which was very well supported, that obviously was very likely to win, and it did ruin the surprise for a number of customers. So you just have to look at those entertainment markets and see, you know, generally the contestant that's been well backed is normally very hard to beat. It is good. And as I said, I won't spoil it for the listeners out there, but I know my wife gets very in tune with a lot of these shows. So I do like, if she's rubbing me up the wrong way, I do like going out and giving her a spoiler alert based on the market on certain occasions. But
that is a crazy phenomenon. We talked about it in an episode last season of like certain things, such as reality TV, where someone is betting on something that has already occurred. And that in itself is, you know, dangerous. And obviously there's going to be a number of people that must already know what happened. And yeah, I think the tip you gave out there is a pretty funny one. If you want to impress your missus by kind of saying, oh, I reckon this couple's going to win Love Island, or this contestant looks good chance in The Bachelor, maybe having a peek at the odds. But my tip would also be, if you're into those shows, because hey, plenty of guys love these shows as well, don't look at the odds. If you are into the show and you're invested and you don't want a spoiler, because the odds could quite often end up being a spoiler. Total change of pace here. Go into this as in-depth as you like, or as little as you like as well, but tax in gambling, is this something where, you know, your business is running on either profit or loss every quarter? In terms of, I don't think people have a great understanding of maybe all the fees that are involved, but what can you share in terms of how much tax you pay and how that's calculated?
Yeah, tax has been the biggest change in this industry for a long time, and that's where, you know, I'm sure most of the punters here are involved in the tripod group, because they're very passionate about having a bet. They like to back things. And, you know, as you said, there's some bets on some obscure markets. And you'll find that over the last 5 or 10 years, the ease for punters to get set on a number of these things has become a lot more difficult. If you're a winning punter and you're trying to have a bet on a footy game 3 or 4 days in advance, it has regressed the limits in past times, and that's solely on the back of the tax. And I'm not here to slam any of the other bookies in saying that, but like we do pride ourselves on taking the biggest bets anywhere. And but the reason is because you've got to be so careful with the margins at the moment, because the taxes are paramount, are huge. And obviously a lot of these bigger agencies have got to report back to their shareholders, and they can't, you know, they have to do the best in their interests. And the taxes have become a really big impediment at the moment. And we understand completely we need to be paying back to the league, back to the racing bodies and these sort of things. But there's five taxes you pay. You pay your normal income tax, you pay your GST tax, you pay your wages tax, or your employee tax, and then you pay point of consumption, which is where you pay a percentage of the revenue for wherever you are placing the bet at the time. So if you're in Queensland, we pay 15% of all the revenue to the Queensland government for that, and then you pay a race fields or a product fee based tax for all of the sports and all of the racing bodies around the country, and they're the ones that are really excessive. And for argument's sake, on Melbourne Cup Day, if we won 100,000, for argument's sake, we have to pay them 30,000. We pay them around about the 30% mark in revenue. There's a few different parameters that go into it. But then on the next day, if we lose the 100,000, we have to then pay 3% of turnover. So you're square, but you've paid a percentage of revenue on your winning day and a percentage of turnover on your losing day, which makes it very hard, because for us, we want to take risks. We want to take punters on. We're prepared to take winning punters on, but you're going to have those ebbs and flows of winning and losing days. And under that model, it makes it very, very difficult, which is why we've seen a change in the philosophy of bookmaking in Australia.
Yeah, there wouldn't be a lot of sympathy out there for bookies paying tax, but if people understand, it gets passed back down to the punters through the prices you offer. But, you know, a good example is like a typical line, a 50-50 line, where you're offering like $1.91 on each side. When it's a 50-50, it should be $2. And a simple view would be, well, you're ripping people off because you're giving $1.91 on both sides. But if you had $2 on two sides of a coin, because you're paying like all these fees and point of consumption and turnover fees, you'd be losing if you're offering, you know, exactly zero margin markets. It wouldn't be break even. So therefore, that's kind of why, obviously, there is such a thing as a margin that you build in to have a chance against us. What have we got next? Oh, this is one I reckon that could be covered in a whole episode just about, but maybe if you can sum it up in one line or two, an analogy of just like, Jeremy's question here is, how do you determine value? So in terms of, like he said, not everyone's so strong on the maths, but how would you sum up, you know, what's a value bet and what's not?
Yeah, I think you look at it, and the way I look at it is, if this situation were to run out 100 times or 1,000 times, you use 100 for an ease of calculation, how many times will that outcome occur? And then you then regress that back to a price. Like, I think the common flaw is people say something at 10 to 1 is value. That's sometimes completely false. So at $10, the option needs to win 10 out of 100 times, or one out of 10. And if that person is genuinely only going to win 3 or 4 times, it's not value. Likewise, you know, a $1.10 shot could genuinely be value because they are meant to win 90 out of 100 times. So they're going to win 95, 96, 97 times out of 100. That $1.10 is enormous value. So basically, to sum it up in a real succinct way, is to look at how many times you think that option is going to positively occur over 100,000 options, divide that into a probability, and then refer that back to the odds. And it's not just the higher odds are more value. It's how many times more than expectation is that price going to occur.
That is such a common misnomer, that like, oh, I'm going to have a bet, I'm looking for value. And a lot of people out there define value as greater than $5 odds or greater than $10 odds. And I always cringe when I hear people say that's value because the price is high, with no actual understanding of what the odds should be for them to make profit. But I think the part that not everyone can wrap their head around is what you said there. If this occurred 100 times, if this event was played 100 times, how many times would my selection occur? For a lot of people, they just can't wrap their head around it because it does only occur once, and it's either going to win or lose. And, you know, you hear things like, my old man always said, any price for a winner. But it's like, well, sure, if you win, you don't really care what price you got, but in the long run, the price is everything. So hopefully that people that follow us, you know, can wrap their head around that, because that's everything in whether you're profitable or not. Jeff Craner, shout out to the GOAT admin there, is asking a question. I don't know if he's looking for a new job or not, but he's asking, how does someone become a bookie? And not in the moral sense of selling your soul to work for the other side, but he said, we curse the bookies when they beat us, but we love them giving us the platform and the chance to win. My question is more, what's the type of experience, background, or degrees that people need to have to get a job as a bookmaker? Maybe you can reflect on your own kind of team and what you look for when you're hiring.
If you've got the right mindset, if you've got the right attitude, none of it's complicated. None of it's over the top. You know, you need to be a genius to do it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. But it's one of those situations, as long as you're prepared to learn, as long as you're prepared to have an interest and you want to go away and think about how you can do your job better, or you can build your you know, your sport that you're trading and you've got an eye for certain things, then that's all we're looking for. And we feel that we as a collective at Top Sport, we can teach people our way and how we trade. And really there's no requirements. It's just going in. And when I sit down and listen to people in an interview, it's sitting there and listening to what they can bring to our business, how they can sell themselves, the attitude that they've had and their willingness to learn. Yeah. We've got the biggest range of people. We've got a lot of people that come straight out of uni. That's always a very popular one. We've had an ex-pro surfer that's come to us. We've had people from the casino that have come to us. We've had, you know, a pilot that's come to us. There's, there's just, for me, the background, it's not an important trait. It's something that, and we're probably a little bit different to a lot of others out there because we haven't got those specialized roles. People come into trading, we see what they're good at. We don't pigeonhole them as something before they get here. We see what their strengths are and we look at their, at their capabilities once they've started, providing us with the right attitudes.
I did share this on one of the NRL pods a few weeks ago, but I was talking to Alex, who people know, Alex Podowski, pretty well, was part of the pod for 6 seasons and left right about a year ago and now works on the dark side. And I asked him, like, how's it been? How's your first year in bookmaking been? Like, would you ever want to come back to the pod? I try to leave the door slightly ajar. And he kind of said what he's doing is kind of like a dream job. So he vouched for working in your line of business. And that ties into the final question, but it's several parts coming from Brent. I think it's Brent's birthday today as well. So shout out to Brent Creel. His question was, how many people work at Top Sport? Also going into the mechanics of your traders in terms of like what the punter experience is, they place a bet and it will say pending for a few moments. And what's actually happening behind the scenes when that is occurring? And then also, why is that the case? Why doesn't it automatically approve? Like, what are you guys doing, or what's the utility behind that period of time to review every bet that comes in?
Yeah, and first, happy birthday. It's a big day. We've got a team that we've grown from when we first started. It was just myself and Dad, and now we've got a team of 35, and we're bringing some more on in the next little bit. So we'll have a team of around about 40, and the vast majority of those guys are traders or customer service operators. So we have a very heavy focus on bookmaking, which a lot of the, you know, some of the bigger agencies, that they've got a lot more staff than what we do, but the trading teams are probably at a similar number in some respects, but they've got a lot of, you know, your finance people, your marketing guys and all these sort of things, where we outsource that a little bit. Our expertise is about trading. So, but in terms of those things that the guys focus on when the bets do go processing, basically there's a number of different parameters. We've got a bit of auto logic in, and it's something we need to, as we get bigger, we need to enhance, because as you can imagine, when you get more and more bets, it will clog up the intercept. So it's something we're constantly building ways to enhance the amount of bets that go through automatically. But the reason why the bets will sit there for a little bit processing is because, you know, if a bet's placed a bit earlier, we want to see, are we comfortable with our liability at the time? Are we comfortable with the price? Is there any news breaking? We'll have more bets come into our intercept earlier in the piece because we're not as confident in our price at that point. If you have a bet in the last hour of the rugby league or in the last 5 minutes of a horse race, a lot more bets will go through automatically because we're more confident in our price. So basically what we're looking for is to say, do we need to move the price after this bet? We have our limits on specific events. Is the bet under the limit? Is it over the limit? Do we need to, you know, bet to our maximum limit and move the price? Or in most instances, we're going to take the bet, but it's a case of what we do. Are we happy after we've laid this bet? Are we happy to lay another bet on the same option? Do we want to shorten the price to try to get some money on the opposite option? Is this bet sort of an indication that there's something happening? There's a player potentially out, or, you know, all these sort of things that is there, you have the last 5 or 6 bets all been on the same option. Do we need to move it on the back of that? So basically it's a case of just trying to sort of say, what do we want to have happen after this bet? Do we want to take the same bet again, or would we prefer to take a bet on the other side? And that's why that's the biggest role of the trader, is to try to get that point of equilibrium where you're taking bets on both options.
We kind of deep dived into that in the final week of the NRL season, like with all the mayhem and uncertainty of players. It's like if you took a massive bet in that round 25 against the Storm, you might instantly be thinking, oh, has any news just broken about who's playing for the Storm or something like that? So that would be an example of what you'd be checking. And American sports too, there's every day there's key players that are on the injury list. It's never certain if they're going to play or not. And then COVID is another kind of spanner in the works that there can be, you know, if a quarterback of a major team is suddenly out or whatnot, then it's going to change the odds drastically. And we've talked about this before, that if someone gets that info a split second before you, they can take advantage, but you're not just going to be a punching bag and keep getting hit. You're going to try and gather that information for yourself. And decipher exactly what's going on as quickly as possible. So you've explained that well there, so I appreciate that. Thank you. That's everything. We've gone well over the hour mark here, but a heap of good questions, which, again, thank you to everybody who submitted these. Keep it coming. The feedback for us and also any other topics or questions, we can always feed them through over the next few weeks. Thanks again, Tristan, and thanks again, everyone who submitted those questions. Okay, that just leaves the random AF multi 2021. If you're in the group, or following us on social media, you may have already seen this. It is up now on Top Sport website and app to have a lash at if you like it. But I'll just share it super quickly now. 5 random legs, all different sports, all settling pretty much within the last 6 weeks of 2021 or in very early 2022. So coinciding with this series, something that we can all cheer together if you like it. And in fact, Top Sport have even come to the party and given us 2 variations on this, because when I shared it out last night, there was a lot of pushback on one kind of polarizing boxing leg, which I'll get to in just a moment. But the 5 legs are the Aussies to win the Ashes in the cricket, win the series, win the 5 test series against England. I think they're just going to be too strong. I really question whether England even really wants to be out here if they know what's coming for them. In the soccer, we've got the Champions League, which will fire back up after the international break, and there'll be a couple of rounds of matches to end this season, to end the group stage this year. And I've got Man City in Group A taking out that group, and that is despite the fact they're in there with this star-studded PSG that obviously acquired Messi. But Man City, with 4 games played, they're just totally in the box seat. They've got more points, they've got better differential goal difference, and they've got PSG at home in match day 5. If we win, we literally win the bet right there, and they're $1.60 just to win that game. But even if they don't win, a draw still has them strong favourites into the final match day round. And even if they had to lose, we still got a solid chance unless PSG wins their final 2 games. So I really like the odds of that one happening. In the gridiron, in the NFL, the Patriots just really look to be ascending to me. They look really strong. I'd say they're a sleeper contender in the AFC. But this bet, it doesn't need them to win the AFC, just make the AFC playoffs, which 7 teams make it. And I think they're going to be pushing Buffalo in their division, which certainly locks in a spot. But if not, to get one of the 3 wild cards, feel very strongly. 9 wins probably gets a wild card. And I think the Pats can win 10 or more games. And they're a good, strong team that we can cheer on. They play Friday, Australia time. So in 2 days' time. So if you're jumping on this, you do need to jump on before Friday morning, because that's the first result that is going to lock this multi out. And they're a big favorite to win on Friday as well in a Super Bowl rematch from a couple of years ago when they play Atlanta, who aren't doing too well. So I think we'll get off on the right foot on Friday. Basketball, this is a unique market, but I really like this one. It's any Brooklyn Nets player to score 40 or more points in a game, and that's in a span of 20 games, starting Saturday Australian time and rolling all the way until New Year's Day. So we've got 6 weeks, we've got 20 NBA games involving the Brooklyn Nets, any of their players. And obviously I'm looking at the Slim Reaper, Kevin Durant, I think the best scorer in the league, but they got James Harden as well, the guy who's led the league in scoring. And I mean, either of these guys, I feel like either of them heats up and they'll just feed the hot hand on that night. So I think lots of opportunities. We get 20 cracks at these. And the final leg, which you get both options at now, is this kind of novelty boxing match. But this is the world of 2021, is these prize fights. And we've got the YouTuber Jake Paul up against Tommy Fury. And I'm backing Jake Paul, and my reasoning is he's really strategic. He's making obscene amounts of money from these prize fights, and he's really strategic in who he's picking as his opponents. He's only picking fights that he thinks he can sell, and also fights that he's confident he can win. If Jake Paul gets knocked out and gets embarrassed, I think the gravy train kind of stops for him. So I really feel like he's not picking people who he doesn't think he has a chance against. And in Tommy Fury, it's a perfect opponent for him because it's a big name. This guy's famous. He was on Love Island, I believe, in the UK, in addition to being the half-brother of, you know, a god, a boxing god in Tyson Fury. And I think that maybe makes people overrate what quality of a boxer Tommy Fury is. Now, I'm no expert in it. I think Tommy's also the favorite because a lot of people hate Jake Paul. I found that out in our group when I posted this multi, and a lot of people didn't want to back it out of principle. Fair enough. I just think Jake Paul, currently about $2.40 odds, is the value. I think that shortens. I reckon he's going to get a win here and then even look for bigger fish to fry next year. But if you disagree with that, you can actually get this same multi at lower odds if you want to swap out the underdog Jake Paul and swap in the favorite Tommy Fury. So 13-1, max bet $50 on my version. You swap Tommy Fury in for Jake Paul, you get $8. Either way, if you like those first few legs, it is really good value. I laid out all the value and went in even deeper in the group, so I'll save that for now. But thanks for tuning in to the first edition or first episode of season 2 of Wide World of Punting. Good luck with all your punts this weekend. We'll catch you next week. As always, gamble responsibly and lego.